All right. Luke 24. Let's run. Verse 25 to 27. And he came and spoke to them, saying, O fools and slow of heart, to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. Verse 44 to 46. These are the words which I spake unto you while I was yet with you, that all things must be fulfilled, which were written in the law of Moses, in the prophets, in the Psalms, concerning me. So it's therefore important to always read the Old Testament in the epistles. We have seen that there is no conflict, there is no contradiction. There's just a requisite knowledge of interpretation. How do we interpret this? That's why the word diamenio is left. Why do I have to have a diamenio? Language is there, the walls that they happened is there, context is there, and that's where we brought in our own derivations of unifiers. What unifies the walls? What unifies the different times? What's similar? We've seen exile, we've seen all those scenarios, you know, must be presented in their light. In Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 7 and 8, equally, he caused the people to understand the law, and the people stood in their place. So they read in the book, in the law of God, distinctly, and gave the sense as caused them to understand the reading. So that means the Old Testament is such that we must give it its clear hermeneutical meanings. That is, we must cross the boundary, the language boundary and barrier. We must look at the context and a lot of other factors. I must submit to you that on this theme, this particular one we want to deal with in this session, a whole lot of help is granted us from the New Testament. Even though, like we have said, the New Testament simply is reading the Old Testament, but a whole lot of help comes from that. Because I want to look at the concept of angels, because we've done a bit of it already. There's no way you can explain God's righteousness and not look at God's servants, who God uses. Within what we have said so far in this series, we've established that, yes, the instrument of God's righteousness need not be, right, morally righteous all the time, one, and then they need not be efficient, but they are sufficient enough to carry out the task. The question is, can we extend these parameters to angels? The first challenge we have about angels is there is a thinking that is a primordial sentiment which we probably grew up with. Like I did say earlier on, exactly the concept of the issue of immortal soul is just something that has been around for a while, and that is the perfect nature of angels. Coming with it is the issue of a third of angels were cast down from heaven, devil, and then a lot of things have already colored your interpretation of scripture. You may not know how far it is until you start to confront it. Sometimes, in interpretation, what I found out is that sometimes the greatest challenge is not what is written, it's what you thought. And the longer the way you thought stays, the more difficult to overcome such barriers. So the issue of angels comes to play, and we are going to establish a few things, and I want us to look at it from very biblically logical angles. We did establish the other day on the concept of the Bene Elohim, that is, the council of gods, or the council, the sons of God synonym, council of gods, and all of that. An important element will be the book of Job. The book of Job is Moses. I'm not going to argue that with anybody. The book of Job is a Moses interpretation, Moses rendering. It carries all the conversational things, God and Satan, just like that, Genesis 3, 15, 14. And then Job and his friends, like I said, there's a prologue, monologue, dialogue, everything is in there. Imageries, figures of speech, oxymoron, quite a poetic rendition of spiritual truth. So the book of Job will be a signpost on the work of angels. And that already shows you that clearly Moses is saying, whilst God will be said to have done it, there is a Satan whom we'll find from Old Testament as an accuser. It is Satan, again, is not a spiritual word. It just means somebody who opposes you, who brings charges against you, and who is evil against you. That's what Satan is. It's used for, in fact, at some point, I think it's in Numbers, it was used for what the angel did to oppose. Alright? So we have those phrases. But Moses pictures that this Satan walks through man and is a spiritual being. In Job 1, 2, and 3. Yet the conversation entails till the end that God did it. In fact, the end point is the evil that God did to Job, in spite of the explanation. That shows Hebraism again in writing. So Job will be a signpost. The conversations, we need to all reread it. You need to consult our earlier teachings on Job, consult some teachings we've done before. I think there's one, Rumors, I think. What's that title again? Huh? Beyond Superstition, yeah. Let's imagine, does the New Testament write that way? The Matthew 4 and Luke 4 conversation between God and Satan is imagery, is only poetic. So that means the New Testament equally mirrors such conversations. Matthew 4, where it says, the tempter took him into the holy city. Matthew 4, 5. Matthew 4, 5, into the holy city. There you have the temple, pinnacle of the temple. And oftentimes, when you look at Jesus' conversion in the temple, they are with the Pharisees, the rulers of this world. So that is an imagery that shows you the conversation between Jesus and Satan who walked through men. Luke 4. Luke 4. So when you have wilderness, it's just temptation. Again, it has a numbers narrative. Wilderness. Luke 4. High mountain. Luke 4, 5. Then Jerusalem. Luke 4, 9. Pinnacle of the temple. So these are things that happened to Jesus amongst men. So Job will therefore be a signpost of the work of the devil. But something we are also going to see in the introduction of Job is that there is the sons of God, which came up later in Job 38. Where were you when the sons of God cried in the morning? Job 38, that should be verse morning stars, the sons of God, Job 38:7. So, the first thing we must ask, because you can't discuss God's righteousness, how did he fulfill the covenant? Are we going to totally remove what happened through angels? No, we can't. So the first work is to ask who angels were. We have two commentaries that we're going to review. The first will be Psalm 104 verse 4, where there is a definition. Psalm 104 verse 4. You are sure not going to have much information, because the Bible is not a book of angels, it's a book that is for man. Psalm 104 verse 4. Who makes his angels spirits, pneuma, wind, unseen, his ministers a flame of fire. By using flame of fire, something should come to mind too. There is the Genesis 19:24. Somewhere in your mind, Sodom is there. by using the word ministers is the word sheraph. Sheraph is an assistant. Genesis 39 verse 4. Exodus 24:13 used for Joshua. So if we call them servants, sherach, those who assist you to do things. Okay? They were not spokespersons. Because if let's look at the logic of it. This is how I want to think. If angels are servants in the realm of, they carry out God's will in the earth, so who were prophets? Who's following what I'm saying here? Are you getting it? Who therefore were prophets? If they carried out God's will in the earth, and they are to execute God's will in the earth, so that we trust them that way, then what were prophets meant to be? And the writer of Hebrews did it in such an exegetical format. He says, Jesus did not come in the form of an angel. Which shows you that if you are going to walk through, you walk through man. God walks through man. The covenant is with man and for man. Somebody has asked me before, why doesn't God save the devil? I said, did the devil tell you he wanted salvation? Those are very foolish questions. Do you understand? You understand? Did you have a conversation with him and all that? So, the word angel is the word malak. Malak. Which again, in Hebraism and Egyptian culture, simply means messenger. Messenger who is a servant. He assists. So the question is an angel assisting God? Okay, God wants to carry a chair. He assists God to carry a chair. Is that what it is? That can't be what it is. So, if we look at the overall intent of the Jewish scriptures, vis-a-vis the four gospels, then the book of Acts, and then the epistles, it has to be in the salvation plan of man. That is where he assists. So the first thing we are going to see about angels is that they are spirits, and they are like wind, ruach, and all of that. Psalm 103 verse 20. Bless the Lord, ye his angels that excel in strength. You have the word gibbon. Gibbon is powerful. Powerful. But look at verse 21 before you get there. Bless the Lord, all ye his hosts, ye ministers of his, who do his pleasure. Then 20, just 21, sorry, I read, then 20, it says, they do his commandments, hearken unto the voice of his word. Now, David uses the word call, the same in Genesis 3, 8 and 10. The word is the word daba, speech, logos. Unto his logos. So, where do we find his logos? His logos is in the mouth of his prophets. The logos is in the mouth of his prophets. God will do nothing except he shows his servants, the prophets. Not he shows his angels. Amos 3:7. By the hand of the prophet he delivered his people. You have enough text like that that is all over the Old Testament. That's look at Psalm 105. Verse 26, he sent Moses' servant Aaron, whom he had chosen. They showed signs and wonders. They showed signs and wonders among them, and wonders in the land of Ham. He sent darkness, he made it dark, rebelled. Again, don't forget that these are words that have pronouns, don't have no pronouns, turned their waters, you know, and all that. You see that there is Moses is being spoken of through out here. Moses, Psalm 105. Because of the covenant given to Abraham. Verse 15, touch not my anointed, do my spokespersons no harm. And he's talking about a whole nation. So we therefore are made to think well about the ministry of angels. The ministry of angels therefore deals with man. So a few things will come to mind. Genesis 1:26-28. Man is what is made in the image and glory of God. Unlike the Hebraism thinking or the Near Eastern thinking about them being close image of God. It is man that is the acorn of God, the Salem of God. Genesis 12:3-4. What you multiply in the earth is man, not angel. So that there's enough commentary to see that the focus of the Jewish scriptures is man. And so man is God's agent in the earth. If man is God's agent in the earth, if he will use servants and use prophets, the prophets therefore will have the servants at their behest. That is not difficult to understand. People think that what happens is that God just says, hey angel, go and do this for me, go and do that for me. I think I want to save humanity. What I want to do now, and then. So what are the spokespersons? What are the prophets for? Obviously, the prophets play a primary role. The angels play a secondary one. That must be well established. In Genesis 20 verse 7, we establish that Abraham was God's prophet. Nabi. N-A-B-I. Don't know why I always think it's Anobi. Exodus 7:1. Aaron was to be Moses' prophet. Moses will be Elohim to Aaron. So which means, when you have Elohim, then you have a spokesperson. God's spokesperson is Moses. Moses' spokesperson is Aaron. Moses' servant who helped him carry out tasks is Joshua. So, Numbers 11:29, Numbers 12:6, angels are not never called his prophets. So the question is then, how do they hearken? They will hearken to his prophets. They will hearken to his prophets. The prophets might not be efficient, but they are sufficient enough for us to establish this important connection. They will hearken to his prophets who carry the voice of his word. Therefore, in a case, for example, look at, before we go into a few details, of course, we established that man is the prophet, man is the focus of the covenant, angels are to minister for man, for the prophet, the spokespersons. So in the order of things, we never should rank angels with man or above. Angels are made by God, God's servants, that serve man. And if his prophets are his representatives on earth, then they have a delegated responsibility. These are issues that they are like landmines. You ensure you don't step on any. You cross them carefully and ensure that you detonate all the bombs before they go off. So at the end of the day, you don't invalidate the Old Testament because you want to defend the character of God, or you call God what he is not. A view for us will be the incarnation. If it's the end product of the covenant, then we look at Matthew 1, Matthew 2, Luke 1, Luke 2, and we see again that where angels spoke, Jesus didn't say anything. Matthew 1 and 2. He's born, angels are predominant. Luke 1, the same thing. And in every time angels acted, it is that it might be fulfilled. So angels came to carry out the prophecies of the prophets. Let's view a few of it. Matthew 1, verse 18 through to 22, that it might be fulfilled that which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet. So the angel came to carry out what the prophet had said. Matthew 2:23, that it might be fulfilled. Matthew 2:15, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet. Matthew 2:23, that's the one that which was spoken by the prophet. So angels came to carry out what God told them directly, or what the angel or the prophet said. Okay, so that should clarify a few concepts to us. Matthew 4, where was the angels again? We don't see anything said. They came to minister to Jesus, Matthew 4:11. After that, there is a silence. Luke 1. Then there's a Mark account. Mark 1. Angels ministered to him, 13. Then Luke 1. Where you have the angel came to Zechariah, and then what did the angel say? The angel quotes the prophets. Luke 1:15, 16, 17, the power of Elijah. Malachi 4, 5 and 6. Verse 17, Malachi 4, 5 and 6. He's quoting Elijah. So, the angel here, again, is quoting Elijah. Mark, Luke 1, 35. The Holy Ghost will come upon you. And all of that that he says, again, is quoting from the Old Testament. It shall be great. Verse 32, 31. The Lord God shall give the throne of his father David. That is 2 Samuel 7, 14, Psalm 2, 7, all of that. So, angels acting according to prophetic intimations. Would that be correct? Alright, good. The next time we see them will be at the resurrection. Matthew 28 and verse 2. Where they acting to the voice of Jesus. You seek Jesus that was crucified is not here for his reason. Verse 6, as he said, come see the place where the Lord is, as he said. So they take intimations from the earth, as he said. Mark 16. Verse 6. Don't be afraid. You see, Jesus is risen, is not here. Behold the place where he laid. 7. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you in Galilee, that he shall see him as he said unto you. As he said unto you. Can you see it? So they listen to what he said in the earth. Luke 24. Again, verse 6, he's not here. He's just remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying. So, what are they doing? They're acting to the voice of his word. Who's following what I'm saying here? John 20. Where Jesus is basically seen speaking to the disciples or to Mary. Acts 1, 11. You men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from heaven, shall come in like manner as you have seen him go unto heaven. Verse 11. They are basically quoting what Jesus has said before. Luke 21, 27. That is, you see him in the book of Acts. That's what they are saying. Why are you downcast? That what is, you get what I'm saying? Ah, like, what are you, people think he's talking about rapture. No. You will see him. As you see him go, you see him in a like manner. And that happened in the book of Acts. Why are you gazing? You know, basically, they are saying there will be a manifestation of Jesus in the earth. He hasn't gone anywhere. They are simply re-echoing what Jesus had said before. Acts 5, where the angel set Peter free from jail, and verse 20, the angel said, go and speak in the temple to these people all the words of this life. I can tell you that this is prayer answered. It picked from the prayers of the saints, as you are going to see in Acts 12. Acts 10, which is a vision, you know. Acts 12, the angel just set him free. The Lord, verse 11, has sent his angel, delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all the extension of the people. But Luke lets you know that in verse 5, the old church was praying. So he picked his words from the church. Acts 27. For there stood by me that night, 23, the angel of God whose I am, whom I serve, saying, fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. This is just re-echoing what Paul had been told earlier. Alright. So, with the advent of Jesus, we see a clarity there. That the angels are acting the voice of his word. They're acting to when people pray. And all that. I think I skipped something. Daniel 10:12. I wanted to show you Daniel 10:12. When Daniel prayed. And then look at what the angel said to Daniel. Daniel 10:12. I came for thy words. Before thy God, thy words were heard, and I came, I am come for thy words. I am come for thy words. So the next commentary we are going to definitely have is the book of Hebrews. We are going to look at Hebrews 1, 9, Hebrews 1, 13 to 14. In Hebrews 1, 4, the writer of Hebrews says, Jesus was made better than the angels. Much better, and as a more excellent name. Diaphoros is the word. D-I-A-P-H-O-R-O-S is used for different. Now, in case you need to see where that term is used, Hebrews 8, 6. More excellent ministry. Showing you a difference. A better covenant. Hebrews 9:10, diverse washings. Then he says, more excellent name than they. The word there is Kreton. K-R-E-I-T-T-O-N. Again, it shows difference. 1 Corinthians 7:9. Then I'll restrict myself to Hebrews 7:7. The less is blessed of the better. Hebrews 7:19. better hope. Hebrews 7:22, better testament. Hebrews 8:6, better covenant. Better promises or excellent ministry. I think I've mixed something up here. Hebrews 9:23. Better sacrifices. Hebrews 10:34. Better and enduring substance. Hebrews 11:16. Better country. Hebrews 11:35. Better resurrection. Hebrews 11:40. Something better for us. Hebrews 12:24. Better things from Abel. 1 Peter 3:17. 2 Peter 2:21. So clearly, there is a rhetoric in Hebrews that should not be lost on a faithful reader of scriptures. That rhetoric is one, God never called an angel his son. They were not to take his inheritance. Okay? Angels are not to be raised from the dead, nor have his inheritance. Verse 6, angels were to be worshipped. No, angels are to worship Jesus, the Son, who is a man. Proskuneo is used to bow your knees. Then he says, the ministry of angels is letogos. Public ministry, a public servant. L-E-I-T-O-R-G-O-S. That's how he interprets Hebrews 11, Psalm 104, the one we read earlier. He interprets in Hebrews 1, 7. Ministers. Letogos. L-E-I-T-O-R-G-O-S. Now, you find where this is explained. Romans 13:6 used for public servants. Those who are public servants who act on behalf of those in authority. Romans 15:16 ministering, the minister of Jesus Christ, okay, offering up the Gentiles and all that, ministering. Romans 15:16 was for Paul himself. Hebrews 8:2, a minister of the sanctuary of the true tabernacle. Philippians 2:25, used for Timothy. So the rhetoric again makes a distinction between Jesus and angels. Again in Hebrews 1:13, which are the angels said, sit on my right hand. To sit is authority. Right hand. Okay? Where you walk through, alright, to extend dominion and power. God doesn't walk through angels to carry out his will. It's not, angels are not at the right hand. So that means that Psalm 110:1, it has to be a man. Genesis 1:26-28. And critically, they are not heirs. But they shall be ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation. Heirs, kleronomia, kleronomos, all those words, and then soteria, shows you what is in view. He uses the word letogikos, ministering spirit, L-E-I-T-O-R-G-I-K-O-S, sent forth aposteloma, which is because, how are they sent forth? Hebrews 1:1, God spoke in the prophets, angels attend to what God said through the prophets. So that brings it together for you. God spoke through the prophets. Angels attend to what God said through the prophets. So angels attend to prophets or to those who are God's spokespersons. So therefore comes in the first dilemma. Hebrews 2:1, therefore we've got to give the more earnest to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them drift away. If the word spoken by angels, this writer picks his phrase, I've been told you Hebrews 1:1, if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression receives a just recompense of reward. Now, this is critical that we don't lose this. let's look at this variance that he makes here. He's going to make a variance because he makes a variance between what angels said, then verse 3 of the gospel or the word spoken by Jesus. Then he says, when it comes to Jesus, God bears witness with it with the signs. So which means that the signs will differ. God bearing them witness with signs, wonders, diverse gifts and gifts of diverse miracles and gifts of the Holy Ghost. Take your mind to Hebrews 3 and verse 9. They saw my works for 40 years. So it shows you that you must study closely the signs and wonders in the incarnation and the signs and wonders before it. For what he does through Jesus, it bears the signs of what? Of it. So then, that is God further bearing them witness. Son, sunimam, material or something. I forgot that word. God further bearing them witness. So, we must therefore do a classical differential in the signs then and the signs in the four Gospels. They have connections. They also have differences. So, it's showing you that there's the signs that were done by the gifts of the Holy Ghost. Hebrews 3. It shows you that Jesus' house had more glory than Moses. Hebrews 3:3. More. And it gives you the case study. Hebrews 4:2-3. They don't mix the word they heard with faith, the gospel. Then Hebrews 5:1, high priest, gifts and sacrifices taken from amongst men. It paints the picture of the law. Then read through Hebrews 9:1, where he says to us that this is a worldly sanctuary, though it has emblems of divine service. Hebrews 10:1, a shadow of good things to come. Hebrews 12, from 26 or 25 through to 29, showing the differentials in the two times. So, listen to this very well. If you don't believe the prophets, you will be rightly judged. Just recompense of reward, Hebrews 2:2. How shall you escape? Hebrews 10, if you despise Moses' law, and then they died without mercy under two or three witnesses, Hebrews 10:28. What do you think will happen to you if you do worse to the gospel? Hebrews 12:29. It mentions vengeance. I will recompense, Hebrews 10:30. Which simply means there will be no remission of sins. Hebrews 10:16. Hebrews 10:26. No sacrifice for sins. So Hebrews 2 presents for us a picture of this or that. Not this and that. So which means that the angels carried out the recompense of the law of sin and death. Who was struck back, how did it happen? Hebrews 2, 5-6 settles our minds again and says, look, it is man that God is mindful of, and the Son of Man that he visits. Jesus was made a little lower than the Elohim, angels. That's Psalm 8, verse 4-6. Then you go to Hebrews 5, 6, 7, 8. Look at the differentials. That distinction between the type and the shadow, the law and the promise, is that distinction you also must make between man and angels. One was to serve the purpose of the other, even though weak, even though not efficient, same as angels. Hebrews 12:24, Hebrews 11:39-40. So the just recompense of reward in Hebrews 2:2 is the word endikos, which is used in Romans 3:8. It's just. Just. Which means that they carried out, alright, under the Moses' law, Hebrews 10:28, the just recompense of reward. Under Moses' law. under. So if the word spoken by angels will be, they acted via Moses, or Moses acted through them, under Moses' law. Hebrews 10:28-29. Every disobedience, parakoe, and transgression, parabasis, disobedience of Moses' law, which is multi-purpose, judicial, criminal, etc., etc. So at this point, we tread cautiously, not to say, were they perfect? Obviously not. Were they wrong? You can't view them outside the one who they worked with. So they will have what the lawyers will call vicarious liability. The angels will be as liable, as imperfect, as inefficient as the prophets, if it ever happens. If the word spoken by angels, even though it's Moses' law, shows that they were walking with Moses. So look at the point. Hebrews 2:3-4 says, if you reject the Son, then you have the law of sin and death. Then he gives you the narratives which we have always said. He's not saying today angels are going to do anything to you. He simply says, go to history. See the signposts. When they disobeyed the law, Moses asked them to be put to death in their world. And that was done by angels. Were the angels wrong? No, that's not the question. It's Moses you should point to, not the angels. Who's following what I'm saying here? So, this is the part you have to tread very cautiously. Then, he says, how much more? Hebrews 10:28-31. A sore punishment, he says. Sore punishment. And the word there is very strong. Estinio, to eat up, to devour there, to devour, estinio, to eat up. Hebrews 10, sore punishment. Of course, there's something you know, Hebrews 10:29, the word E was sanctified there is E sanctifies. The E there is not present at all. Sore punishment, suppose ye, sore vengeance, judgment. Uses the word crisis in 27. By certain fearful looking of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. Devour there is what estinio, to eat up. Eat up. Fiery indignation. Fury there is the word zealous. A zealous one. So that means that you will find angels zealous, just like Phineas, very zealous. And what we have here is a quote from the Old Testament, Ezekiel 36 verse 5, and of course verse 28, you have Deuteronomy 17 verse 2 and 6, two or three witnesses. So he's saying to you here, the adversaries, the word hupernatios in the Greek, I didn't get that, hupernatios or something like that, but you find in Colossians 2:14. Then he mentions fear. All the elements of the narrative, all you simply need to do to what he's saying here is go to those who did not accept Moses' law. So he's saying to you, Moses simply carried out the judgment of sin and death. He said, if this is what happened, and they just physically died, what do you think is going to happen to the fellow who rejects the eternal redemption? He will also have eternal death. That's the echo there. So this comparison is not difficult. He's simply saying, go and see judgment, vengeance in the Old Testament. There will be vengeance and judgment if you don't believe the gospel. That's all he's saying. He's not saying angels do that anymore. He didn't say that. Obviously, by reading the four gospels, you don't find angels doing that again. Because angels will serve the Son, And so by the signs, wonders and miracles you see in the Son, you will know what the gospel is. So we said, the signs and wonders will differ as well. So the rhetoric in this account is not difficult to see. The rhetoric simply means it is not angels. The rhetoric simply says, don't look at angels, listen to the prophets. Angels simply carried out what Moses said. And why did Moses give the law? Don't forget. Because they did not mix the word with faith. Hebrews 4, 2 and 3. Hebrews 3. They had in their hearts, verse 8, the day of provocation. The air always in their heart. Hebrews 3:10. Hebrews 3:12. They departed from the living God in unbelief. Had in their heart again. Hebrews 3:13. The carcasses, Hebrews 3:17, fell in the wilderness. Hebrews 3:19, unbelief. So unbelief becomes the template by which angels acted in those very ash ways that we saw. So will angels therefore reflect the laws of Moses? I ask the question. Will they reflect it? Okay, they will reflect the laws of Moses in their day. Because they are to akin to their words. So in Hebrews 10:29, a sorer punishment, let me take back that word, is the word timoria, penalty, from the word timonio, T-I-M-I-R-E-O, timario. Timoria means penalty. Acts 22 verse 5, Acts 26 verse 11 simply means a penalty for what you've done. It's always just. Suppose you be thought worthy who are trodden under the foot. Katapatio in the Greek, K-A-T-A-P-A-T-E-O, it means to insult, trample upon. Matthew 5:13, Matthew 7:6, Luke 8:5. Luke 12:1, Old Testament imageries. Matthew 5:13, Luke 7:6, Luke 8:5, Luke 12:1. They are all Old Testament imageries. Always keep reading from the Old Testament what he's saying. In their imperfect world, yet a signpost of something, an eternal consequence. Trampled upon is to insult. That brings in the Matthew 12 issue, blasphemy of the Spirit. To insult the Spirit. Look at the next thing he says. Who are thrown under the foot, the Son of God, counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing. A thought worthy there is the word axion. Counted worthy. Axion. From the word axio. A-X-I-O-O. Actually, that's the word. Deserved. They deserve it. Shall he be thought deserving? So he's saying to you that the judgment of the sinner is deserving. Hebrews 3:3, axios, or axio, Luke 7:7, Acts 15:38, Acts 28:22, 2 Thessalonians 1:1, of course, 1 Timothy 5:17. Which means, if you look at what they did towards the gospel, and how they got a big punishment in their hardness of heart, what do you think is going to happen? Because this is the law of sin and death, then what do you think is going to happen eventually? That's the comparison. What is he saying to them? He's saying you are desiring punishment and not salvation. You are desiring just recompense of a reward of unbelief and not redemption. You don't want sanctification. Then what you saw in the Old Testament will be small tea party. He's only being honest. Why does he paint these scenarios? Hebrews 2:3. If you neglect so great salvation, Hebrews 3:17, whom he was grieved. Unbelief, Hebrews 3:19. Hebrews 4:2, did not mix the word with faith. Hebrews 10, one we read earlier. Sin willfully, 26. All these have numbers in mind. Numbers will be in mind. So the big question is, whose instructions were angels carrying out in the Old Testament? We have seen the concept, we have read earlier, God sent his angels. And then Acts 7 will help us. Acts 7. We'll explore more of this, no doubt. Acts 7. Where Stephen talks about the angel by the God, the ruler, the deliverer is Moses. By the hand of a messenger. Acts 7:35. Acts 7:39, the same angel. 7:38, the angel. Acts 7:53, by the disposition of angels they have not kept it. Hebrews 2:2, of course, Galatians 3:19. So angels acted for God by acting with man. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So does it not when they said, let us call fire, and Jesus says, you know not the spirit that you are of? How does he make that distinction? Is he disclaiming Elijah? Not totally. It's just saying, I've come to fulfill the covenant here. And so, I've come to seek and save them, not to destroy. But the question should be, what if I don't save? What if I am not believed? They will be lost. Destroyed. And it will be just. So we got on the angels factor later. Like I said, there are landmines you mustn't step on. You must detonate them carefully so that you are not caught putting a blame on angels. Neither should you put a blame on the servants. But the Bible is honest enough to tell you that God's servants were not efficient, but they were sufficient enough. And this is the same narrative we'll have to use for angels. When Jesus came, we saw they were taking instructions from the scriptures of the prophets and from the mouth of Jesus, and the epistles, we can see clearly what roles they played. So, I think we'll be done today, this week. Something to think about on the subject of angels and all.